In the mornings, we had to be there before the gutters, so as we'd have the farland filled up for them as soon as they came in, and they started at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it was just hell for leather, heads down, and the hern was in a constant silver string going out the back of them, and they knew exactly when they caught the hern in the hand what size of hern it was and what tub it, but they had no call to look at the tub behind them. They knew exactly the pitch on every hern, what tub to put it into.
Heed. We'll mark it for loaf and sell it for breed. Heron seed, loaf and breed, and all sorts of things. For all the fish that swim in the sea, the heron it is, the fish for me. Sing fa-la-la-lido, fa-la-la-lido, fa-la-la-lido-lide-ay. And fiddle-widdy with the heron's eyes, fiddle-widdy with the heron's eyes. We'll mark 'em for puddings and sell 'em for pies. Heron's eyes, puddings and pies. Heron's heat, loaf and breed, and all sorts of things.
Well, the first time I went away, I thought it was terrible. I was very kind of... I just thought to myself, well, it'd be better to be home, you know, at the rising early. And it was all a rush. And but then it had dancers then, you see. And the evening... This all went away then when evening came at the weekend. We all looked in, and then the girls were all together, and the younger ones, they were very good. The four men were very good. The younger ones, they gave them a great chance, you know. They could. But we were tired. Just we just wouldn't even get up in the morning because it was your arms, your hands, your hand was sore with the knife, using the knife all the time, and they're very tired. But when the weekend came, we did enjoy it, and we soon got used to it, and there was great fun there for that. Great fun in the yard, you know.
And fiddle-widdy with the heron's fins, fiddle-widdy with the heron's fins. We'll mark 'em for needles and sell 'em for pins. Heron's fins, needles and pins. Heron's eyes, puddings and pies. Heron's heat, loaf and breed, and all sorts of things. For all the fish that swim in the sea, the heron it is, the fish for me. Sing fa-la-la-lido, fa-la-la-lido, fa-la-la-lido-lide.
Herring are what they call pelagic fish, like salmon and mackerel and pilchards. They're migratory fish, and they appear at certain times of the year in inshore waters where they gather in huge numbers to feed and then to spawn. And that's really when the boats would come after them to capture them. Now, as well as this sort of movement, which is almost like an offshore-inshore movement, dependent on the time of year, really, the water temperature, the weather, the availability of food resources, fairly predictable times of the year, which again was another reason why they were so commercially so important. Now, as well as this sort of offshore-inshore movement onto the spawning grounds, the feeding on the spawning grounds, they also change their position in the sea. It's what they call a diurnal pattern of movement. And in effect, during the day, they would go back to the seabed where they would sleep. They would rest during the day. And then as darkness fell, they would all gather together and they would rise up through the water. And then they would feed almost at the surface of the sea. Fishermen used to say you could actually see them. You see this sort of silver glow, or sometimes just before they spawned, the bodies of the fish would get a red sort of... So you could almost see this flash in the water, or they would look for the oil that they gave off as they jostled in this, and you could see this sheen over the water. And that at night, that's the fish up close to the surface of the water feeding. And then as day started to break again, they would gather up in their big shoals and they would all sink back down onto the seabed, ready for their rest the next day. So they had this sort of fiendishly simple method of capture, technologically, you know, very sophisticated, called drift nets. And drift nets consisted of, you had a train of nets, which was sometimes up to, they would maybe stretch for 3 miles, these nets. And they were connected to each other within two ropes. And the top rope would be buoyed, so it would float at the top. And the bottom rope would be weighted, so that the nets hung like a curtain in the water. And the mesh was of such a size that the fish could only partially swim through. So they got caught by their gills. So another name for drift nets, so you often hear them called gill nets. And the beauty of this system was it allowed loads and loads of boats to fish on the same fishing grounds because it was stationary. You had moving fish and stationary nets, so the fish swam into the nets rather like, say, in trawling, where the net chases the fish. So it's an important characteristic of the herring industry, this meeting together. You had a meeting of the fish, and then you had the meeting of the fishing boats from all corners, because the boats would go to where the fish were, and the fish were in different parts of the coast on different times of the year. So theoretically, you could actually fish herring all year round, but obviously not in the same spot. So it was very much a hunting industry, depending on a sort of foreknowledge of where the fish would be, an ability to read the signals that told you, then once you got there, when the fish were going to appear, and that's where you put your nets, and then you would catch them.
Well, the herring came into the boats at the pier, and then always a lorry brought them up. A lorry or some kind of a bogey, some kind of, there'd be always something that would take the fish. And they were put in the baskets, put in the, over the the parlin. But at the parlin, there'd be all the packers stood out in the yard where they stayed at that. They called it a rugen tub where they kept their fish salted up on, you know. We had all tubs, six or seven tubs. And then we had to carry them to the packer. But they were very, very exact all through what the fish should be like. But you had to keep going. You put the knife into the gut, and you shook out the gut. That's how you do it. And there was, you had a, what they called a cog for to put the gut into. They were put all in there. But then again, there's always a smart way that some people snip them. You know, they just cut them. The gut was left in, and they were done very quickly. Which you got very quick at it. There was never, didn't want much talk in there. There'd be not much talk in there, because every week, if you weren't watching your, you know. And you had a good cement path that was coming down, you know. And you wouldn't stand in water. Oh, no, it was very dry. You would see fish when you go to bed. You could see fish coming up. I often saw them coming towards me. You were watching that much of the fish all day. You could see the fish coming towards people. We did it the first year we went to Strawnsea. We had great fun. That was my first time away from home. And I thought everything was wild. I missed home so much. Everything was all so wild. And we went to work and didn't know the catch they had. We learned on mackerel first. And mackerel is a very strong fish. Got these mackerel first, and you might as well get a bit of wood and try to chip it up and take them at the mackerel. And that's where they give us the chance for to learn on the mackerel. Well, we'd be at the fish, but we'd be so tired when we come in. We just wouldn't be fit to move, you know. I'm terrible, terrible tired.
What they call the herring gutters left Burton Port. They took the train from Burton Port to Derry. And they got the boat in Derry for Scotland. They left Glasgow and they trained up to Aberdeen. And they went from Aberdeen to the Shetlands, a place called Lerwick. When they worked there for about 2 months in a year, and they left there, and sometimes they came to Fraserburgh, Peterhead, or the Isle of Man, or Arglass, because these ports, the fishing lasted a bit longer. The Lerwick fishing finished a bit earlier than these other ports, so they were transferred back to here. Then they left there And they went to Lowestoft and Yarmouth, to the east coast of England. And there were a lot of curers there, you know, from, I say there could be about 12 or 14 different curers curing fish in these places. And that means all over as well. So at the end of the season, they came home, and maybe for the whole season, that I'm talking about from 1920, if they came home with 30 or 40 pounds for their season, they were rich people. But going back to my time, I left home in 1947 and went to Arglass in the County Down and worked with a fish curer there, John Ross and Sons. I wasn't at the Gutton, but I attended the girls that and men that were at the Gutton. And my job was to see that the Farlands was kept full of herring. Also, to see that the packers had plenty of salt to cure the herring. Now, every gutter had about 7 tubs behind her and behind him as well. At one stage, we had 7 selections of herring. We had fools, we had large, we had mat fools, we had matties, we had small matties, we had smalls, we had dead smalls, and we had TBs called torn bellies. They all had to be put into different barrels on their own. So the cooper then always had the end of a barrel for every crew, and he marked down their day's work on the end of a barrel so he could take it back to where he was staying and put it and lodge it into the book. During that period, from the fishing would start to the end, the days maybe that there wouldn't be fish, we would be there, and what they call filling up had to be done, because after 3 days the herring subsides in the barrel and they have to be topped up a bit, take them up to the level of the barrel, and you lid them and you roll them off and you pickle them. The pickle is made out of salt and water.
We went out anyway this time too. We went out to the Shetlands, me and my sister went out. And sometimes, you know, it'd be very, you get tired, you say, well, I'd pack it in. We got the bus first to Derry. And then we got the boat in Derry. And we're down then, and we got the, from across on the other side of Glasgow, we got the train to Aberdeen. That was a long route. And right then, that was a deadly run out to there, we got the Shetland. It was all right. It was, I think it's what they call it, I don't know if the roost or the roosk, but once the boat went out round that corner, everybody got sick. I've seen everybody lying sick in the boat. It was such a rough passage. There was 2 nurses. And I don't know many workers, isn't it? But they all got sick. And so one was attending, giving a cup, so I said, I got sick, but I wasn't sick. I took the bed. I was going to have pneumonia. I laid down. I made myself sick. And this old nurse was running about. And she must look around. She caught me smiling. She says, you're not sick. What are you doing in there when you're not helping? Give me a drink, please. I said, I'm not well at all. Well, I'm sorry. She said, I thought you weren't sick. I see now you're a bit pale. She said, all got sick. Rough passage. And I feared that going out there. But, and now we're going to get to go by plane, and that's different. I like going out the Shetlands, but I wouldn't like going on that boat. You got the boat in Aberdeen.
Herring were very important because you got these huge amounts of fish in the one area, all of a similar quality and age and that sort of thing. And the problem to do with it was, what did you do when you caught them? Because tons and tons of fish. So the commercial herring industry always rested upon cured herring. It was based on a trade in cured fish. This was actually pickled fish, but they're curing is what they call it. Used to be the boats would cure, the fishing boats would be equipped to cure as well as catch. And it really, but in the 18th century, for a lot of reasons, a shore-based curing industry grew up. And essentially the boats followed the fish, the curing industry followed the boats. So you would get all three factors coming together in the one locality at different times of the year. Now, herring was gutted. There were two important types of workers in the curing industry, the gutters and the coopers. The fish was cured actually in barrels and specially made barrels. And coopers tended to be the curers. In fact, a lot of curing firms would have started off, a cooper would gather his assistant coopers and then they would get the gutters, and the gutters were the women.
And fiddle-widdy with a herring's back, fiddle-widdy with a herring's back, we'll mak it a laddie and christen it Jack, herring's back, laddie ca-jack, herring's fins, needles and pins, herring's eyes, puddings and pies, herring's heed, loaf and bree, and all sorts of things.
But when I was 16 years, there was nothing else in the future, no future for me, but to go to the gut, where all the girls were going to. And Stronsley was the first place we had to go off to. And I hated leaving home. I hated what was before us. But when we got there, it wasn't so bad, you know. It wasn't all that. It was quite nice, you know. And there were dancers in it, and there were plenty of sport in it. It wasn't that we were sitting in, you know, you could go out for a good walk in the evening. If you're finishing time. But I remember, I always think of the hands. When you'd wake up in the middle of the night, your hands were sore with big pieces, maybe cut the knife. The first time I started, we were put on mackerel, the gut mackerel. And the hands were scraped all. There were two or three dabs. We weren't used to it, you say. We weren't active with the knife. We were cuter the next day. We had our hands right bandaged. Don't know what you tell us, you say. And we'd wash them then. There was an old woman there. She was up the game more. She'd put her hands into dettol. Wash our hands, wasn't dry them. I suppose what was wrong, we didn't piece our hands right. If it was now, you could have gloves on, I think. And the tying the fingers was a terrible length. Took a terrible length, but which tying up the foot on the bandages, all the finger. Every finger had to be pieced. Some people were quick at it. And the rubber bands came out then, but they seemed to tighten when they got damp. They tightened on the fingers. Your fingers get stiff with them, but the fingers always had to be pieced. Not if you were filling up. You didn't want for that, only for the gutting. And that's the worst job I hated with that. With the piecing the fingers and the early shout in the morning, the rap in the doors. The cooper would be down knocking the doors up, and it was very hard to rise because we were great sleepers. And then you were out to work. The ports were closed, some big lot of fish came in. The hands would be sore and you'd be tired. But we were young, I suppose that's how it was. But it was very hard work. It was rough packing. The rough packing, as I called it, was very, very hard. It was piecework. And you had to go as hard as you could. Just go as hard as you could. Just that it was a job and that you were working. That was the only thing. It was all very hard work. But work you forgot about at the weekend. You know, it was all washed away for the weekend because there was so much sport and so much nice people. Them Scottish people were very nice. And even the coopers in the yard would take us and wash our hands and put dettol on. We were looking after our hands right. But it was... We got over it all. I often wonder it must be the hardest workout and the hardest earn money.
Well, first of all, you had to put pieces of calico on your fingers and tie them up with thread. And a danger of cutting yourself and salt getting in, and sometimes it does happen. But this was put on your fingers to protect you from the salt and getting wee jags there. Every finger had to be pieced. Thumb and all, the lot. And you stood there and you just one dab and you had the gut and the gill and all out of the hern, all in one go. As fast as ever they could go. There was some, now this, there's some of them could do over 60 hern to the minute.
And how long would they be keeping that open a day?
Well, I suppose they could slacken off by times. They would be maybe dropping down to 58 or something. But there were some of them tamed. I know one man that was tamed, and he done 63 hern to the minute. He was going some. And I know the woman that done 60 hern to the minute as well.
And she'd be able to keep that up all season?
Well, very near. Very near. You know, they were strong and fit. Boys and girls, there was at that job, it had to be, because it was very hard work. And especially in Lowestoft and Yarmouth in the winter time. You went there and a freezing fog, you'd be down on a place called the Deans in Yarmouth and Lowestoft. And there were no, there were only just a shade with iron stanchions and a tin roof over you. It was all opened up. And I seen myself there, girls fainting at the Farland with cold. And men too. And you were down on them deans, it's for 6:30 in the morning. So whatever time you could finish in the evening, it could be any time. There were no early timing at all. Your starting time was 6:30 in the morning in Lowestoft and Yarmouth, but you worked on till whatever time you had the herring for that day cleared up. The foreman cooper was walking round steady, and the other coopers, there was about four coopers and a foreman cooper to every yard, along with other helpers as well, you know. And there was always two tipping in, and you had these kind of wooden shovels, shoveling them up tight to the gutters so they wouldn't have to stoop too far to catch the hern. And the hern had to be salted in the Farlands, or the girls couldn't grip them. If you put in the hern without salting them, they'd be sliding all over the place. And they'd be shooting out of their hands, they wouldn't be able to hold on to them. So the salt had to go on, although the salt was going into the kits and into the barrels, but if direct from the boat into the Farland, you had to put the salt on them too, so the girl, and keep throwing an odd scoop of salt on. They had scoops, wee tin plates.
Fish were caught throughout the night because that's when the herring were moving around, and then they were gutted and packed the next day. Herring go off very rapidly, so you can't let them hang around too much, or you've wasted your time catching them just to let them rot. So the fish would be landed in the morning, and they would be sold on the pier. They were sold by what was called a Dutch auction, so the price started high and then came down rather than the other way around. So as soon as the price dropped to a level that the curers could afford to buy, they would buy their supplies of fish, and then they would have been taken from the boat side on the pier. They were gutted and packed right on the pier themselves. Now I have a wee picture here which shows the women and the coopers. So you can see there's the barrels of done herring ready to go off. Here we have the women. This big truck is called a Farland, and essentially when the fish was bought, it would be placed in the Farland and the women would work out of this truck. You can see it's just a big wooden sided thing. The sides are about 3 foot by about 9 foot in width. The gutting girls worked in crews of three. You had one gutting and two packing. Packing was more time consuming job than gutting. I worked out that they could gut and pack 2 tons of herring a day. And they would have worked from the fish hit the Farland until it was all put away. It was very, very rare to allow any fish to overnight because it went off. So you were stuck then the next day with having to get rid of your rotting fish that probably wouldn't have passed. They had a system of quality control called a Crown brand, originated from, they used to get a bonus or a bounty, it was called, on the herring for export, depending on it being of a certain standard. And even when the bounties went, this Crown brand was maintained. It was just like a sort of quality seal. And they were very rigorous in adhering to that, to this, because it would have all been sold unseen. The herring went to Russia and Germany and America. Most of it was, this was an export industry. Now, some would have been sold in Ireland, but funny enough, the Irish were funny because they actually preferred the Scottish herring. So you will have herring cured, which was a different type of herring too. The different herrings that met in the different locations were, they're divided into races, herring. So it would be a bit like someone liking, you know, a certain type of beef, like Aberdeen Angus beef, and not liking this beef, you know. And I wouldn't go as far to say there were sort of racial characteristics in your preferences for herring. But it's interesting to know that when it went to America, it tended to be European emigres that the marketers would, that aimed for that market.
What did you do at the weekend?
There's a place, a Fishworkers Institute there, where you could go and visit, where you got your hands dressed. And you would have games and everything there, all sorts of games. And that was a great pastime, because they had all games for the boys and everything, and billiards and everything. But the young coopers there, the pastime was, they sang all day at work. And that was a great thing, you know. It made everybody feel happy, and when you were down, when you got something to bring it back.
Did you sing yourself?
Hey, I was just that thing. I could sing. I wasn't a good singer. I was a good singer in my day, but not just now. I used to compose a bit of song. I did compose one with the fishing. Now I wrote this myself. I'm not a singer now, you'll understand that. Oh, Cheerconnell, how I loved you, from you I couldn't part. Cheerconnell, how I loved you from the bottom of my heart. Oh, dear Errigal, what a mountain beneath the deep blue sky. Dear Errigal, you're beautiful, and I'll love you until I die. While old Muckish stands so glorious, while the golden sun is low, how it brightens up our scenery on the road to sweet Dunlow. Many fishing ports I travelled, while great Yarmouth I did see, that brought me up to London town, but it didn't appeal to me. It was the harbour lights at Burton Port, at the closing of the day, when our fishermen came sailing in and watched them sail away. Oh, Cheerconnell, how I loved you, from you I couldn't part. Cheerconnell, how I loved you from the bottom of my heart. And with their big prop boots and oilskins, their active brawny hands, one gallant man who owned the crew, they'd always give command. They must plough the deep blue ocean, they must fight the angry sea. Oh, Burton Port, I love you, you're my sweet old Grandma Fry. Oh, thank God for health and happiness, no wealth thou seek at all. Just my tiny little cottage in the hills of Donegal.
Oh, that was lovely.
Aye. But aye. I loved home. I was one that was very sad leaving home. I wouldn't eat 3 days before I'd leave home. I wouldn't eat 3 days before I'd leave home. And I couldn't eat before I'd come home. I wasn't one that liked away. I didn't like away. I went in farms as well in Scotland, you know. But I was so fond of home. I was so fond of Ireland. Now, when all these four, five families left here and went to Scotland, you know, there was nothing for them. There was no future for their children. So one woman said to me, Alation, I think you're the most you should get out of it. And I stood outside and looked at Errigal. I looked at all the beauty around me. And I said, no way. I'll hold on. I loved here too much. I loved home too much. I had a good happiness for home. And as a family, we had very, not riches, but great time there, we loved home. Loved home very much. That I could get no place like it.
Patting was very, very precise. And you started off, fish would be sort of put in head to tail, but they would almost like spokes on a wheel, so they would radiate out from the centre of the barrel, like petals on a flower opening, and then the next layer would be put in, and then the next layer would be put in, until you get one fish depth layer in the bottom of the barrel, and then you covered that with salt, that was sprinkled with salt, and then the next layer went in, and the salt, and the next layer is salt. So you can imagine these women pack. I mean, these are big barrels. There's, how big would they be? It would come up to certainly breast high or shoulder high. So you're bending down into a barrel, arranging fish, and then covering them with salt. It was back-breaking work. Once the barrel was full of the freshly gutted and packed fish, it would be lidded and roughly bunged, and it would be left to what they call pine for 3 or 4 days. And during that time, there was sort of like a chemical change occurred between the juices that left the fish and the salt. And that was the start of the curing process. And after about a week or so, depending, this is when the cooper skill came in, because they had to know when the fish were ready to be sealed in their barrel. They would take out the bung, and what they called the blood pickle would run out. That would run out, be allowed to run out. And because the fish shrank as they pined, they would head it up the barrel, again, with your neatly arranged layers of thing. They would make up a pickle, a brine with pickle, and that would be poured in until all the air was driven out of the barrel, and then it would be bunged and sealed, and that was it.
They had to wear oilskins, you know. It was near like a skirt, and it had shoulder straps on them for the women wear, and a bib on it here. And the men wore aprons and Wellington boots, and that was your rig. Or if you wanted to keep your head warm, you wore a cap. And the women wore scarves on their head, or a turban, or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a wee bit more about the system of getting paid?
Well, you didn't get paid to the end of the season. And your total was there at the firm, and you kept a record of every day's work yourself to make sure that you weren't done. And you compared it with his the day you went out, and it's at the end of the season you got your money. You settled up at the end of the season for your money. But to keep you going, you got £3 a week. But this was outside of what you earned by gutting the hern.
And would rows ever break out if the two didn't tally?
I'm sure they did.
Do you have any memories of that?
No, I have no memories of that. I never heard of anybody falling out, you know.
Right. So it must have been fairly...
Fairly accurate. But the cooper always kept it right himself. He had an end of a barrel, and he had a big... And he would mark all these things on the end of the barrel. Yours. He'd mark mine. He'd mark his. And so on. Everybody's was marked there and counted that day. Before the packer left, she went with him, and she had her barrels for Leinster, and she knew how many barrels, so she had her tally with her, and he had his tally, and the two of them corresponded right to the end of the season.
Crews were sort of self-selected, which I think was very important. Obviously, these women had to work very closely together. The three of them had to be able to do everybody else's job without, and there was no room, I suppose, really, for one person not pulling their weight, obviously dragged the whole crew down. They were paid piece rate, they were paid per barrel, so their money depended on how many barrels they filled. And again, I mean, I've said earlier about the herring industry, the herring fisheries, being a very sort of communal sort of thing. And this motif of shared responsibility and shared opportunity seems to come running through it. And again, in Donegal, certainly, there was a tradition of migratory labour in Donegal anyway. The fishermen had been doing this for years because they had to go and follow the herring. And this, I think, was a way that the women got involved in what could be an exceptionally lucrative trade. I mean, I was saying again, 2 tonnes of herring. 2 tonnes of herring is 8 barrels. Now, at the beginning of the century, I think it was a shilling a barrel. You were getting, this is between 3 people anyway. So you might be talking about 8 shillings a day between 3 of you at a time when harvest labourers might have got 5 shillings for a week. But you couldn't cure herring all the time, you know. So essentially what would happen is that the opportunity to go to the herring would arise. The women would have sorted themselves up into crews of 3, and then they would contract to a curing firm. They've been bound by a sum of money, which is arls, which is your earnest money. That's your contract money to prove that your word has been taken. In 1920, this would have been 5 shillings. She would have needed to, what they called, follow the fishing from Lerwick, which is up in the Shetland Islands, June, then maybe to Ardglass, then maybe to Peterhead or Fraserburgh, then on to Hartlepool and North Shields. And that would take you from about April to October. That would be your 6 months' work. I think, too, they probably would have been tended to be unmarried women. There's a train of thought that would say this was a very convenient way for fishermen's wives and girlfriends and that to travel round with them. But the people that I've been spoken to, as soon as they got married, they formed a base for their husband and their family, and they would tend to stay in one spot. So it tended to be the younger unmarried girls, I think, that would have made up these crews. Perhaps there might have been married women with them. The Shetland curing industry in Lerwick, I mean, its reputation for being a place of hard living, I suppose, would be a way. Certainly, they seem to have had great fun, which is, again, is interesting because we would look at herring curing, particularly in the gutting and the packing, of being an absolutely repulsive job. But most people speak of it very fondly. They're very, very good memories. And they would rather do that, have been doing that, than what we would have thought maybe cleaner work in a hotel or a shop or a factory or something like that.
And fiddle-widdy with a heron's belly, fiddle-widdy with a heron's belly. Mack it a lassie and christen it Nelly. Heron's belly, lassie ca Nelly. Heron's back, laddie ca Jack. Heron's fins, needles and pins. Heron's eyes, puddings and pies. Heron's heed, loaf and bree, and all sorts of things. For all the fish that swim in the sea, the heron it is, the fish for me. Sing fa-la-la-lay-do, fa-la-la-lay-do, fa-la-la-lay-do-lay-day.
And what were the digs like?
Oh, the digs were good. Oh, the very best. I think it's 6 shillings each we paid for the room. And we had a nice, beautiful, nice house. It wasn't easy bringing a smell of fish into our nice place. She had a place out, that place outside for the boots, you know. But I found the landladies all, that they were all very nice, you know. And then mostly all the ones went into one area where all the workers was. These Scotch people are lovely people. They're head people and the praiseable girls. They were all a terrible nice team. You just could be very happy with them. No, no such thing as fighting or, you know, no bitterness. I remember now there was no church with no mass there. And you found the Sunday very long, you know, when there were no, there was church in the Shetlands. But the priests used to come out from the Shetland and have mass. I mean, there was a place called the Pap Island. And there was mass over there. And we all went over to Pap Island. There was about 40 or 50 men out. And we'd be very unhappy. But we'd go down to the fish workers' rest, where to get the hands done. And they had service on the side. So I laugh at it, you know. We go in, the nurses came out and said, oh, come in for this bit of singing, the songs. And this was the Protestant songs, those were the hymns. We were young girls, we all walked in and joined in the singing. And we had such a laugh, you know. When we came home, then this woman told me, Mother, we never spoke about it anymore. This woman told me, Mother, oh, she's not even going to Protestant service. In this place, well, right in the Shetland. But they were very nice. There were dances, and there were great things to think, look back on. Even the work was hard as hell.
Heron's tail, fiddle wid dee with a heron's tail. We'll market a ship be a beautiful sail. Heron's tail, ship be a sail. Heron's belly, lassie ca nelly. Heron's back, laddie ca jack. Heron's fins, needles and pins. Heron's eyes, puddings and pies. Heron's heed, loaf and reed, and all sorts of things. For all the fish that swim in the sea, the heron it is the fish for me. Sing fa la 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 do fa la 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 do fa la 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 do la day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.